Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And I thought since we are ending January here, right into February, a couple final thoughts on The New Year's, written by Leon Hoffman, a psychologist from Chicago, titled Decisions for the New Year. A popular New Year's tradition encourages many people to make all sorts of vows and resolutions. Because of the obligatory nature of those promises, loads of such dreams are dashed and not realized. Please consider revising and instead choose to make agreements or decisions with no moral implications attached. In other words, say, I will, I am going to, I choose to, I prefer to. Say that instead of, I have to, I should, I must, I ought to. Such decisions carry no implications of good or bad or of right or wrong. One simply is overweight or underweight, has overspent or not, smokes or doesn't, or drinks too much or doesn't. The agreements that one decides to make with oneself are contracts, and as with all contracts, they exist for only one purpose, and that is so that one can interpret deviations from them. If one decides, for example, to stop smoking and doesn't, one can then ask how that breach might be understood and what can be done about it. No guilt or punishment is involved. The new year offers a fine time to review our choices and may help motivate us to do so. And while we're at it, consider avoiding toxic relationships and pursuing nutritious ones. All living beings succeed, thrive, and perhaps even prevail when they do so. Pretty simple, really. My hope is that 2015 will be a successful year for myriad people to succeed in making their lives more fulfilling, satisfying, and actualized. Good luck to us all, and Happy New Year. Interesting. My hope is that 2015 will be a successful year for a myriad of people to succeed in making their lives more fulfilling, satisfying, and this is a great word, actualized. Interesting. Actualized. And we certainly hope that. And wish that. And one other thing we wish. As Jim O'Driscoll from Tinley Park asks and begs the neighbors to take down the lights. With the holidays now behind us, I have a message for all of you who have decorated your houses with those beautiful lights and stunning scenes. Enough already. Please give us a break and turn off your Christmas lights. Christmas has come and gone weeks ago. We get it. Your lights are the most beautiful on the block and in the neighborhood, village, state, country, planet, and universe. Now please have mercy on us and pull the plug. We've had to endure your deflated snowmen, tipping reindeer, and the perfectly aligned lights that have adorned your shrub since before Thanksgiving. You've managed to take a special holiday with festive displays that I've always looked forward to and, by the time Christmas rolled around, simply made them annoying. Next year, fine. Put up your lights before it gets cold, but turn them on 1 week before Christmas and turn them off on New Year's Day. I implore you, stop making Christmas boring long before the day arrives. Thanks in advance for next year. Well, I better take it on my Christmas tree then, I guess. It's from Jim O'Driscoll from Tinley Park, so a couple thoughts for the new year. Let me make sure I mention this little public service announcements for our friends at Ballet Chicago. Ballet Chicago's co-founders, Daniel Duell and Patricia Blair, along with resident choreographer Ted Seymour, are traveling across the country for Ballet Chicago's 2015 National Audition Tour. This year's 23-city tour began January 4th in Bangor, Maine, and will continue through February 1st, ending in Chicago. The Chicago auditions will take place on Sunday, February 1st at Ballet Chicago Studios located at 17 North State Street in downtown Chicago. The schedule is dancers ages 7 through 10 at 12 o'clock, dancers ages 11 through 14 at 1, and dancers ages 15 and up at 3. Kind of interesting because Ballet Chicago has a year-long program. They have a five-week summer intensive from June 29th through July 31st, offers the serious ballet student an unparalleled training experience which transforms dancers through highly focused guidance, correction, and validation. The program concludes with a theater performance showcasing all the disciplines learned throughout the course. Ballet Chicago's two-week advanced intensive, August 3rd through the 14th, is a perfect complement to the five-week summer course. Every year, students flock to Ballet Chicago from cities throughout the United States, Asia, South America, and Europe to take part in this exceptional accelerated training program. The program concludes with a theater performance showcasing repertory learned during the course. Ballet Chicago's Junior Intensive course, June 22nd through the 26th, or August 3rd to the 14th, gives students the foundation necessary to excel. Students learn beautiful posture, how to combine purity of form with expressiveness, and how to better focus their minds as well as their bodies. The program culminates with an in-studio viewing. Finally, the full-year program, September through June, provides comprehensive training for the serious student who aspires to be a professional dancer. Students train daily to master advanced technical skill, musicality, articulation, consistency, artistry, and the self-confidence necessary to succeed in the competitive world of classical ballet. A unique feature of the program is that students are given the opportunity to become members of Ballet Chicago Studio Company. Ballet Chicago was co-founded in 1988 by acclaimed dancer-choreographer Daniel Duell and former ballerina Patricia Blair. Duell performed as a principal male dancer with the New York City Ballet under the world-renowned choreographer George Balanchine. And Patricia Blair's distinguished career included performing many Balanchine works under the direction of Balanchine star Ed Villella. Since its founding, Ballet Chicago has become an internationally recognized professional track school of ballet. The school is dedicated to rigorous technical training and a culture that fosters personal growth and artistic excellence. Ballet Chicago represents a diversity of dance forms and a diversity of dance students from all ethnic and economic backgrounds. The school enrolls more than 500 students annually, including out-of-state and international students. Ballet Chicago alumni are performing in top-tier dance companies throughout the United States and around the world. Each year, Ballet Chicago's performances touch the hearts of thousands of audience members, young and old alike, at major venues in Chicago. And I can attest to that because what a great production they staged for Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker. Had an opportunity to bring our own family to see it around Christmas time, and they just do a terrific job. So all that information, of course, if you want to get more, you can log on to their website, which is www.balletchicago.org. Always great to get the word out for Daniel Duell, our good friend, and Linda Peters, the Director of Development and Public Relations. So again, balletchicago.org. Well, let's listen to a little music from Chris Botti's album Italia, one of the great arias from the opera Turandot by Giacomo Puccini. Nessun dorma, let no one sleep. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Thank you. from Giacomo Puccini's Turandot, Nessun Dorman, Let No One Sleep. And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. William Shakespeare was the most remarkable storyteller that the world has ever known. Homer told of adventure and men at war. Sophocles and Tolstoy told of tragedies and of people in trouble. Terence and Mark Twain told comic stories. Dickens told melodramatic ones. Plutarch told histories. And Hans Christian Andersen told fairy tales. But Shakespeare told every kind of story. Comedy, tragedy, history, melodrama, adventure, love stories, and fairy tales. And each of them so well that they have become immortal. In all the world of storytelling, his is the greatest name. Chicago Shakespeare Theater presents Short Shakespeare Macbeth, a 75-minute abridged production of William Shakespeare's tale of political intrigue and personal ambition. This new adaptation by director Kirsten Kelly, whose decade-long history with CST includes being the co-founder and director of the nationally recognized CPS Shakespeare program, makes for an outstanding introduction to Shakespeare for audiences of all ages. In addition to the public performances each Saturday, this production welcomes 1,000 students per day during its 5-week run in the Courtyard Theater, followed by an extensive tour to schools across the Midwest through March 20th. Short Shakespeare Macbeth will be performed for the public Saturdays at 11 and 2, now through February 14th. After each performance, the actors remain on stage for a question and answer session before joining the audience in the lobby for one-on-one conversations and photo opportunities. In a world brimming with the supernatural, three witches' prophecies reveal a path to the throne for Scottish noblemen, Macbeth and his wife, Lady Macbeth. Blinded by their royal desires, the couple struggles to balance conscience with ambition, leading to dark consequences. A theatrical world of action, sound, and the spiritual makes Shakespeare's language come alive in one of the playwright's most powerful dramas. And on the line with us right now is the Director of Education and Communications for Chicago Shakespeare Theater, is a nationally recognized leader in the field of arts education. Under her guidance, Chicago Shakespeare Theater's youth engagement initiatives have evolved into one of the most respected curriculum-integrated arts and education programs in the country. In 2012, her 20-year tenure as the chief architect and head administrator of CST's transformational programs were honored by the Folger Library with the prestigious Shakespeare Steward Award. Over the years, Marilyn has worked alongside countless Chicago Public Schools administrators, professional educators, and teaching artists to dramatically alter the way that Shakespeare is being taught in classrooms throughout the Midwest. In 2011, her work through the CPS Shakespeare Ensemble and Bard Corps Professional Development Program for Teachers was showcased at the National Conference for Teachers of English. Reaching across continents, Marilyn serves as a partner education to the University of Birmingham's Shakespeare Institute, and on November 10th, 2014, at an official White House ceremony, First Lady Michelle Obama awarded CPS Shakespeare the prestigious National Arts and Humanities Youth Program Award, the nation's highest honor for after-school creative youth development initiatives from the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities. Now presenting Short Shakespeare, Macbeth, adapted and directed by Kirsten Kelly, through February 14th at Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier, our good friend, Marilyn Halpern. Marilyn, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for the invitation.
I could spend 40 minutes just introducing you.
Well, I was listening and thinking I just need to have you introduce me all the time because I feel like I just gained a foot.
I'm honored to do it.
Thank you.
As I'm honored to have you on the show. What a great production. We enjoyed it last week. And Macbeth was just dating the wrong girl. That's the problem.
It definitely can be interpreted that way, can't it?
I like Macbeth, but he just kind of steered. In fact, I think I dated Lady Macbeth when I was in high school, but I probably got beyond that.
Good. Thank God for all.
he's a man who had ambition. Certainly, he was an ambitious man, but he was loyal to Duncan. He was loyal to Duncan. And I'm going to let you tell the story a little bit because I don't want to get ahead of myself. So better you than I. A little background on Macbeth.
Well, I love where you were just heading because I think that our director Kirsten Kelly viewed Macbeth in this way that the bond between him and Duncan and between him and Banquo, all of the warriors, she wanted to make very strong that he really starts from a very honorable place. At war, he is the best there is. And he's honored by that, for that, by his king. So interestingly, Kirsten's own father was in the military. And I think she really understood the relationships that are created in battle.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens when a person, a warrior, comes home and life is altered. And so she really wanted to take a look at the relationship between husband and wife as a loving one, but also one that was under stress as he reentered after being away for a very long time and in a very different world, the world of war, where he has seen and done unspeakable things.
And that puts a whole different spin on it from that standpoint, I think, Marilyn. When you look at it that way and some of the wars that we have been in, the various parts of the world and so forth, and our valiant fighters and soldiers coming back from war trying to adapt into everyday society, a whole different society from what they were and spent time in. Puts a whole different outlook on it.
I think it helped Chris Gennebach, who beautifully plays Macbeth, and Lenise Antoine Shelley, who beautifully portrays his lady,
mm-hmm.
Get into the humanity of these characters before they make so many horrible choices and can go back no further. They're steeped in blood so far. It's, to me, whether or not any of us will ever, probably not, face those choices, but we certainly face choices where we have people who are urging us to do something we feel in our soul is wrong, and yet perhaps part of us wants it. And so we do face these choices. They're just less extreme than what the Macbeths are facing.
Certainly, a theme that certainly can apply to some of the young people, especially the teenagers and the grammar school kids nowadays.
Absolutely.
That are in school. Yeah,
absolutely. The whole notion of what we do because people have urged us to, and because it reflects a desire in us,
mm-hmm.
That sense that we all have the capacity to be good and we all have the capacity for evil, I suppose, as well.
You know, some of the themes, the corrupting power of unchecked ambition, the relationship between cruelty and masculinity, which you, of course, hear Lady Macbeth accuse Macbeth of being not a man or be a man and perform a certain way. And the difference between, which is probably most prevalent, and I imagine a lot of leaders struggle with, between kingship and tyranny.
Yes, absolutely. And the historical Macbeth was a king, was a successful king for a very long time, for many years, before the taste of power turned him to a tyrant and brought his downfall. So yes, there is absolutely that thread, both in the play and in the history that Shakespeare was responding to as he rewrote history.
Now, I wanted to look at the chronology of the play, and of course this is known as the Scottish play, taking place, of course, in Scotland, and how William Wallace and that whole history of Braveheart, I think that came after Macbeth, did it not?
I do not know the answer.
Yeah, I think, I thought it was.
I can only Google quickly enough.
Yeah, I think this was like in around 1000, 1050
Macbeth,
or something.
Macbeth is right around 1000.
Right.
Braveheart.
Yeah, I think that was later in the, maybe it was 1100 or 1090 or something
right.
Like that. Of course, really all those years just kind of, I don't remember them all that well.
Yeah, those middle ages, they're so far away.
But kind of interesting in how that fit in, but still a very violent way of life in during those times.
Absolutely. violent, and yet, and I think your introduction so wonderfully said this, that even in the extremities that Shakespeare writes about, we see ourselves, and yes, we aren't all wielding swords every day, but the human elements of this story and the way he portrays these characters, whether it's the Macbeths or Macduff, who loses his entire family, Lady Macduff, whose husband leaves her for his job, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these are elements of our own lives. So, yes, extreme, but very much relatable emotions.
And I have to compliment, just not often, and I, of course, go to enjoy a lot of plays and certainly works on the stage, that you get scared, but the witches were great. The witches were really scary. So I did a little research on the witches, and of course they're called the Weird Sisters in the play, and finding out that weird during Elizabethan England meant destiny or fate, and they're equated to the three fates of Greek mythology, Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos.
And I did not know that. That's really fascinating.
Interesting. Clotho spins the threads of life. Lachesis determines how long one lives. And Atropos chooses how one dies and cuts those threads of life, which is kind of representative of what's on the stage there, Marilyn.
Absolutely. Just before, a couple of years before Shakespeare wrote this play, King James of Scotland became King James of England. And it was certainly King James's hope that Scotland and England would be united. I don't think he would be very happy about the referendum of last summer that called that unification into question. He never saw that happen, but he was very much a Scotsman. And when Shakespeare wrote this play in probably the second or third year of King James's reign, it has all sorts of echoes of James, including the witches.
Mm-hmm.
He was fascinated by witchcraft, initially drawn to it, and always drawn to it. Initially, he was sort of seeking out witches and creating laws, and later, very interestingly in his life, he started attending witch trials and was defending these innocent people who were being accused of being witches.
Really?
But it was something that it was a concern of his in one way or another for a very long time, and here the Scottish play brings that thread in to Shakespeare's work.
As you're talking, it'd be interesting, and I'm going to do this when I do a little research when I get home. How many plays by Shakespeare were written after James became king and Elizabeth died?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's about mid-career.
Is it? Is it that many,
yeah.
Huh? Okay.
So King James came to the throne in 1603. He had already written Hamlet. He was somewhere, you know, in the midst of Othello and Lear, and all of these dates are somewhat permeable.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have many records left, either of printing, because Shakespeare printed so few of his plays during his lifetime, or only about half of them.
Mm-hmm.
But even those that were printed, we're not sure of their origin. Is it really Shakespeare's play? Is it some bastardization of it? Is it some version that was performed on stage that was different? So there's so much question. But in general, when James came to the throne, King Lear was still to come. Macbeth was still to come. All of his romances were still to come.
Hmm.
King Henry VIII was still to come. And most of his other histories were behind him by that.
So the four great tragedies, Macbeth, Hamlet, King Lear, and Othello, were kind of grouped together. Then he kind of jumped to the romances and some histories.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, interesting.
And Coriolanus came a bit later, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he might have had a little help. I always say that you saw that movie Anonymous, didn't you?
I did. Why did you have to bring it up? But you're right. He absolutely had help. And I think that that's one of the aspects of more contemporary scholarship of Shakespeare that is trying to tear down all of our preconceptions that there had to be one paragon, one solo genius. The thinking nowadays is that so many of these plays in the early modern period were written by one person working with another or several people in collaboration.
See, I don't think it tears it down. I don't think it diminishes his greatness or anything like that. I think it makes kind of, I mean, how would he know so much about all this Greek mythology and histories and everything? I mean, it's a lot to grasp for a guy that grew up in a farm there.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he grew up in a town. But yes, it was a rural town. It was a market town.
Yeah. You know, it's always so much fun to chat with you. And congratulations on of course, your most recent accolade, which was the National Arts and Humanities Youth Program Award. You must be quite honored with that.
It was a lifetime experience to be in the White House, in the East Room, to meet one of the people I really respect, which is who is the First Lady, and to be there with some other stellar programs that also received the award that day. It was one of our students who accompanied me. And she was the student who was selected to actually speak in the East Room. And so Jenny sat next to Mrs. Obama, and she gave this beautiful, beautiful speech about what CPS Shakespeare meant to her in her development and growth. And it was quite a day.
And, of course, you're referring to Jenny Gonzalez from Prosser Career Academy.
Yes.
And isn't she just one of the so many of those children whose lives you've touched, Marilyn, your group has touched, that come to enjoy and appreciate Shakespeare and have the opportunity that they might not have had before?
I think without question, each year we're working with an ensemble of about 25 students and about 5 or 8 of their teachers working together in an ensemble to put on this Shakespeare production on our main stage, the same stage that we have Macbeth on right now. And it absolutely affects their point of view about Shakespeare, but I think, I know even more important than that, Kevin, is when a student struggles and achieves something they felt was impossible, that's a life lesson that carries on in every further chapter in our lives. And so I think it's that sense of self-confidence. It's that ability to face struggle and to get through it and to have that discovery in words open up to you in a way that it has never done before. That will carry on in all of these students' lives, whether or not they ever open up another Shakespeare play, though I know they will open up other Shakespeare plays.
And to that point, what's interesting, reading some of the biographies in the playbill of the actors on stage for Macbeth, many of them cite that very thing. They say how Shakespeare has changed their life and their ability and their viewpoints and how to look at things and to attack problems and so forth. So even as adults, young adults as they are, these young people are getting a taste of that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the reasons we include that more personal element in the professional actors' bios for Macbeth is I want our student audiences to see the bridge between their lives and the lives that might seem distant to them of the actors on stage. In truth, we often get questions about how did you memorize your lines?
Right.
How did you understand all of this? And I urge the actors to be really honest with their own struggle in and their own homework, the homework they have to do in breaking open this text, so that their experience is really likened to any of us, including the students, that it's work, and that it's the impact, the power that it opens up, the feeling that it, one has in speaking these words, in having these words at our side to express inexpressible emotions, is unsurpassed.
I'll compliment you on one other thing, besides witches, of course, was the young man you had come up before the play started, and try to talk to the students and explain to them, enjoy what's on stage here, and you're not going to necessarily be familiar with Elizabethan English, because the last time we looked, nobody talks that way anymore, but it's poetry. So get the poetry, get the mannerisms of the actors down. And I say that to people because so many people are intimidated by going to Shakespeare or going to an opera or going to the theater or going to the ballet. Well, I won't understand it. Well, do yourself a favor and do a little homework on it. Understand the story, so at least you get the storyline, what they're supposed to be telling you. Then go enjoy the art of what's going on stage. And it'll be remarkable how much more you enjoy it.
Absolutely. And just the musicality of the language. Honestly, even though I've been here for a very long time, there are many, many times I'm watching plays here and elsewhere where it's primarily the beat and the music of the language that I am responding to viscerally. I may at some point not be following the meaning, but it the musicality of the language carries me through, and I do think that pre-show talk that we do is so important,
yeah.
Because for people who are Shakespeare phobic or you know, just don't feel like Shakespeare is for them, it really is like the doctor saying, you know, well, this shot will just hurt for a split second and then you'll feel better. Well, this is, you know, it takes everyone's ears a few minutes to get adjusted. And I want people to know that isn't a time for them to shut down. It's just a time for them to open themselves up to the experience that's unfolding in front of them. Because if they do that, it will come to them. I know it does.
You know, it is always so delightful to chat with you because we stimulate and engage each other's imagination and creativity and intellect. I hope our audience feels the same, and I know you do that every day at Chicago Shakespeare Theater.
Thank you, Kevin, and I'm so very grateful to you for appreciating this work and wanting to share it with your audience. So I thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. What's coming up next for Short Shakespeare?
Well, the next one is not, we haven't yet decided.
Okay.
It's a year away.
Okay.
I can tell you.
Okay.
It will be a comedy.
Oh, good.
We don't know which one yet, but we now vow that every other year between Macbeth and Romeo and Juliet, we owe our students a comedy.
That's good. Well, I'll look forward to finding out what it is, because you know we'll enjoy talking about it.
I'll talk with you then if I
Chicago Shakespeare Theater believes that Shakespeare speaks to everyone, a global theatrical force. Chicago Shakespeare Theater is known for vibrant productions that reflect Shakespeare's genius for storytelling, language, and empathy for the human condition. We have evolved into a dynamic company producing award-winning plays at our home on Navy Pier, throughout Chicago schools and neighborhoods, and on stages around the world. We serve as a partner in literacy to Chicago Public Schools, working alongside English teachers to help struggling readers connect with Shakespeare in the classroom and bringing his text to life on stage for 40,000 students every year. And each summer, 25,000 families and audience members of all ages welcome our free Chicago Shakespeare in the Parks tour into their neighborhoods across the far north, west, and south sides of the city. Reflecting the global city we call home, Chicago Shakespeare Theater is the leading producer of international work in Chicago and has toured plays abroad to Africa, Asia, Australia, and Europe. Chicago Shakespeare Theater presents Short Shakespeare Macbeth, a 75-minute abridged production of William Shakespeare's tale of political intrigue and personal ambition. This new adaptation by director Kirsten Kelly, whose decade-long history with CST includes being the co-founder and director of the nationally recognized CPS Shakespeare program, makes for an outstanding introduction to Shakespeare for audiences of all ages. Short Shakespeare Macbeth will be performed for the public Saturdays at 11 and 2, now through February 14th. And after each performance, the actors remain on stage for a question and answer session before joining the audience in the lobby for one-on-one conversations and photo opportunities. And on the line with us right now is one of the great ladies in Chicago theater, Marilyn Halpin. Marilyn, I really appreciate you spending a little time with us. Maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some more information, dear?
I would love to give you that. The number for our box office is 312-595-5600. And our website is chicagoshakes.com.
There's an old saying, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. And no one exemplifies that more than you, Marilyn. God bless you for all you do for these young people and for their moms and dads and grandma and grandpas and for everything you do for the city of Chicago, you and Barbara and the whole group at Chicago Shakespeare Theater.
Thank you, Kevin, so much, and happy 2015.
Thanks for everything, kiddo.
Yeah, take good care.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Marilyn Halpern, as I said before, one of the great ladies in Chicago theater, and now presenting Short Shakespeare Macbeth through February 14th. If you get an opportunity, please go down and see it, because it is it's terrific. Do a little research, a little background on it, and go down and enjoy it. But certainly something that we can all enjoy. It's a gem. It's a treasure we have down in Navy Pier. Back to Chris Bode's CD, Italia, by Jerome Kern, The Way You Look Tonight. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Chris Bode from his CD Italia, The Way You Look Tonight. And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. The history of cheese fondue dates back to the sheep and goat herders of the 1500s. While moving their flocks across the mountain valleys of Switzerland, they would carry cheese, bread, and wine. Over time, the shepherds learned to melt the cheese into the wine and dip their breads into the cheese, hence creating cheese fondue. And no better place to enjoy it than at Geha's Cafe. And they're going to roll out the romance for a two-week Valentine's Festival. Chicago's most romantic restaurant sets hearts on fire with holiday specials everyone will love. Geha's Cafe, 340 West Armitage, is planning the most romantic Valentine's celebration in its 50-year history. For 15 days, from Sunday, February 1st through Sunday, February 15th, the renowned Restaurant of Romance will be elegantly decorated and feature specially priced premier dinner and wine packages with photo keepsakes and the restaurant's famous, delicious, sizzling hot fondue cuisine. Chicago Restaurant Week patrons dining February 1st through the 12th receive a special surprise as they will be able to enjoy Geha Cafe's Valentine's celebration as well with Restaurant Week savings. Our goal at Geha's is not just to create the perfect Valentine's Day for our guests, but to create it for many days so people can enjoy the romance of fondue, says Jess Waller, Geha's managing partner. We will combine the ingredients of delicious fondue, fine rosé prosecco, romantic atmosphere complete with lavish decorations, couples massage packages at Lincoln Park Massage, and special accommodations at the newly renovated Hotel Lincoln, the perfect recipe for romance. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning leader in the hospitality industry, one of Chicago's great restaurateurs, and the general manager of Chicago's most romantic dining destination, now presenting in his Restaurant of Romance Valentine's Day at Geha's Cafe, 340 West Armitage, for 15 days beginning Sunday, February 1st, and continuing through Sunday, February 15th, a festive two-week Valentine's celebration. The second most romantic man in Chicago, my good pal, Mr. Jeff Lawler. Jeff, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Kevin, how time flies. It's been a year since we've chatted, and it's been a great year, and thank you for having us back on your show.
It's always a pleasure. We've been doing this a long time, my pal.
You know, 15 years comes to mind. I mean, it's probably in that area.
Well, now, come on. I would have been, like, in second grade when I started that, if that's the case. Come on.
Well, you know, you're going to want to add. I think in a previous life, I was a goat herder that made cheese fondue. It is my favorite course at Geha.
Isn't that a song from Sound of Music, The Lonely Goat Herd or something?
Yes, it is. That is my favorite music.
That was you. I didn't realize that was you they were singing about. Well, this is, of course, your great time of year. And coincidentally, of course, tying in with Restaurant Week, you're going to be packed there, buddy.
We are going to be packed. And it's kind of like the perfect storm. Not like the storm they had out in New York with the snow and the water and all that.
This is
a happy storm where we have a great Chicago promotion that's really built momentum over the years, being Restaurant Week. And then you have Geha's Cafe with our reputation of romance and Valentine's. And, I mean, we normally do a week, but now with Restaurant Week here, we're going to extend this, like you said. We're going to be decorated the 1st through the 15th. Restaurant Week pricing the 1st through the 12th. So everybody, I mean, if you can't get in on Valentine's, you're going to have the same great romantic, heart-dripping experience here at Geha's the 1st through the 12th.
Okay. No better place to celebrate Valentine's Day than Geha's. And this year has got to be longer than ever. I don't remember it ever being 15 days. And, boy, you're giving people the opportunity to do that.
This is longer. And
yeah,
it is because of Restaurant Week. So I'm not sure if it'll be like this next year. So now's the time to come on in and enjoy.
Well, you got some special menu options for this coming couple weeks. Tell us about those.
Well, we do. With the Restaurant Week, the premise around Restaurant Week is to have 33 course lunches and 3 course dinners, and the dinners are either $33 or $44 for, like, our lobster, our dinners with lobster. Mm-hmm. So every dinner, either $33 or $44 for the complete 4 course fondue dinner with the cheese, the salad, the entree, and the chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
But we then decided, let's make it really easy. Let's create some ultimate lover packages. And we've taken 3 dinners, the connoisseur dinner, A farmhouse, the connoisseur dinner is the beef, the lobster, and the shrimp.
Wow.
The farmhouse is the beef tenderloin and the chicken for you lamb lovers. And then there's the veggie delight for the vegetarians. We have selected two wines with each course.
Mm.
So all the diners can enjoy, pick from one of the two wines with each course, enjoy each course with one of the wines they pick, and then the Valentine's keepsake that they'll be leaving with is we will take a picture of them and develop the picture and put it into a Valentine's frame and give it to them before they leave.
Boy, that's a great idea.
Memory.
That's a great idea. That's just a great idea.
So we like to have fun.
You always come up with such great ideas and certainly something to enjoy. And, you know, for those vegetarians, and there are a lot of vegetarians out there that would prefer not having meat, you can do a lot with vegetables and tofu.
You can. That's exactly what we have, and we are a vegetarian delight restaurant with the cheese fondue, the chocolate, everything in between. It's perfect.
But for us carnivores, of course, the beef tenderloin and the lobster and the shrimp
yes.
sounds pretty exciting.
Yes. It is wonderful.
And, of course, people forget sometimes because, you know, you think of the fondue, but John Davis, many, many years ago, was the guy who started out the wine bar craze.
He did. He was the first. He created the first wine bar in Chicago, in Old Town, at for Division and Wells area. And it was in after 6 years, in 71, he moved it here to Lincoln Park. He knew that Lincoln Park would be growing, and he needed a larger space. And he stumbled upon fondue, and it has worked out magically for Gejas and all who have come and all who have worked here over the years.
You know, all the restaurants in Chicago, Jeff, and we've talked about this before, I don't think there's many of them that can brag about being around for 50 years.
No, there's a select few, and I know that we are all very thankful for our blessings of just being able to be in business and to have the support from our diners and city and everything that goes with it. Yeah, Geha's 50 years this year will be an exciting year. I don't have a clear vision yet of how we are going to celebrate, because back in our 40th anniversary, we did a world's record cheese fondue. We made an 1,100-gallon cheese fondue, and we donated 800 gallons to the Greater Chicago Food Depository.
Oh, that's cool.
For the 45th anniversary, we invited all couples who wanted to come on a Sunday afternoon that got engaged at Geha's to enjoy a nice afternoon of appetizers and wine and champagne. But within that time, we had 17 of those couples renew their wedding vows.
Oh, isn't that cool?
So now, what do we do to top that for our 50th?
Wow, that's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
It's got to involve fireworks, though.
Yes. So after Valentine's, after the enjoyment of Valentine's is over, my creative juices will be flowing, and it will be an exciting 2015 as Geha celebrates its 50th year of business.
Anybody can come up with an idea, it'll be you. And this is so special because it's attributable to one thing. It's attributable to the quality of the food that you serve. It's attributable to the welcoming people, especially you leading the way, that work at Geha's and worked there for so many years. And that's very important because people aren't going to come back if they're not treated well.
That is true. That is so very true. And because of the people that we have working here, because of our unusual dining experience and our atmosphere, our guests are truly able to lose themselves within each other and within the environment, and just let the world go away and enjoy their few hours here,
which we need sometimes.
Yes, we do.
Now, are those couples massages? Are those right on the table where you have the fondue, or is that another location?
It is. And we use soybean oil. Okay.
Hot soybean oil, by the way. Of course, at Lincoln Park Massage and the newly renovated Hotel Lincoln, great place.
Yes, we have had great partnerships with Hotel Lincoln and Lincoln Park Massage. So many couples throughout the year will get a couples massage at Lincoln Park Massage and then come over here and enjoy a nice dinner. It's like a perfect evening. You're ultra-really relaxed. Then you come here, you relax in our rich, warm atmosphere, and you enjoy your wine and your fondue. And by the time you leave here, you're mush.
Which is what you want. That's your aim.
And then Hotel Lincoln, I know, has great amenities, and they are just in the heart of Lincoln Park. You can walk to Gejaz, and you got the zoo right there. It just makes for a beautiful weekend.
Many people, many people come back many times. For the person who's coming for the first time, what kind of advice would you give them to navigate enjoying a fondue dinner?
Make your reservation. Make it well enough in advance. I would say anywhere from 7 to 14 days in advance, especially for prime-time seating. Then when you get here, just say, you know what, hey, it's our first time here. Don't overthink it. Just relax. Our staff that has been here for numerous years will ensure you have a great time. You don't have to worry about how long things are in. And just kick back, relax, and have fun. We'll take care of you.
Nobody better in the restaurant business than Jeff Lawler, and it's always a delight to chat about Gejaz, and certainly with you, and that's why it's so special, it's so popular.
Well, let's be sure we talk here in the summers during our 50th anniversary so that your listeners can come enjoy our celebration.
Guaranteed. Known for romantic fondue dining, Food One prepares and shares, and an extensive list of fine, moderately priced wines. Gejaz Cafe features over 20 different types of fondue entrees, including cheese fondue and chocolate dessert fondue. An enchanting wine cellar atmosphere, private booths, and subdued lighting contribute to its intimate surroundings. Gejaz Cafe was recently voted the number one audience winner for best romantic dining in Chicago on CitySearch.com. The Chicago Institution has been the site of 135,356 first dates and 16,266 engagements, and diners have enjoyed over 321 tons of cheese fondue and over, get this, 1,072,046 bottles of wine. Quite great statistics. No one at the restaurant can say that, Jeff, I'll tell you that. Gejaz Cafe, 340 West Armitage, is planning the most romantic Valentine celebration in its 50-year history. For 15 days, from Sunday, February 1st through Sunday, February 15th, the renowned Restaurant of Romance will be elegantly decorated and features specially priced premier dinner and wine packages with photo keepsakes and the restaurant's famous, delicious, sizzling hot fondue cuisine. Chicago Restaurant Week patrons dining February 1st through the 12th will receive a special surprise as they will be able to enjoy Gejaz Cafe's Valentine celebration as well with Restaurant Week savings. And online with us right now is the general manager of Gejaz Cafe, our dear friend, Jeff Lawler. Jeff, maybe a phone number or website if people want to get some information?
Yeah, please. Gejaz has actually gotten into the 21st century where people can now make the Valentine's Day reservation on our website.
Classy.
So that's Gejaz Cafe, G-E-J-A-S, cafe.com, and go right to our events, and you can make your Valentine's reservation right online, and we will send you a confirmation. And our phone number is 773-281-9101.
One of the most romantic and youngest restaurateurs in Chicago, Jeff Lawler. Always a pleasure, my pal. Yeah. And I hope to see you over the Valentine's Day holiday.
Thank you.
Okay, my pal. Take care. Thanks, man. Jeff Lawler, one of the great guys in Chicago restaurateurs, and certainly always enjoy chatting with him, especially about Valentine's Day. We're going to look forward to chatting with him about the 50th celebration this summer, because that will be something. And again, for information, 773-281-9101.